now.
Welcome back to the WINY talk show as we begin hour number two of today's show. And at many of your requests, they said, let's take a break from politics and let's hear from somebody that just did something extremely special. And so that's what we're doing in this hour. We welcome to our microphones Detective Donna Brown from the Putnam Police Department. Detective Brown, thank you for coming in.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
You bet.
I'm
you
happy
bet.
To be here.
This is a story that we've all been dying to hear about now that you're back. Detective Brown just came back from climbing the fourth highest peak in the world.
In the world.
Mount Kilimanjaro. And she's been training for this and fundraising to get there on behalf of Connecticut Special Olympics. So we wanted to invite Donna Brown in this morning to hear all about this trip. And certainly, if you have questions about this climb, give us a call, 928-1350. Donna will take some of these calls and try and answer some of your questions about the trip. So you just got back last week.
Wednesday morning.
And I want to go through the whole story with you, but the first question that I can't help but ask is, what was it like at the summit? What was that emotion like? What did it look like? Bring us back to that moment, if you will.
Okay, well, the air was thin. It was a little breezy, but they call that the roof of Africa. It was absolutely spectacular. We reached the summit at sunrise, and when you see the sunrise, they had us all take photos. They paused to, you need to get a picture of this. You can actually see the curvature of the earth from up there, and it was just absolutely breathtaking. It was cold. It was like 20 degrees, like between 16 and 20 when we were up there, and not as breezy as they said it had been for other people. So we were fortunate in that respect.
What did it just take your breath away? I looked at the photos and it took my breath away looking at it.
It was amazing.
And I wasn't even there.
It was absolutely amazing. And to know that all that hiking you were doing, you know, slowly, which in Tanzania, the guides are saying pole, the whole way up, and they're saying, you know, you have to go slow because you've got to gradually acclimatize to the altitude gains, which was anywhere between like 1,500, 2,500 feet a day. But summit day, they gave you a very few hours to rest, and then at, I guess it was 10:45 at night, they woke us up, gave us a quick snack, and we were on the trail to the summit, which that one trek was a 7-hour trek with a 3,000 foot altitude gain.
Wow, so let's put it in perspective. Putnam is at 410 feet above sea level. That's where we currently sit. And you were over 19,000.
Yes.
Is that right? Is that accurate?
Yes, and altitude sickness was definitely a concern, but these people, the people of Tanzania who worked for, it was REI who sponsored this, and we, they all the food that they gave you, they encouraged you to drink at least 3 liters of water a day, everything, including the Diamox, was the medication that you're supposed to take to help offset any altitude sickness you might get. As long as you did what they told you to do, you were good. And there were some people whose stomachs were off, so they weren't eating or drinking what they needed to, and they started having some symptoms. But I was fortunate that I didn't experience that, and that was one of my biggest fears going into this was the altitude sickness. But,
sure, I would imagine that's everybody's thought when they enter into this idea of trying to do this.
Yeah, and you know, 400 feet above sea level and then almost 20,000 feet above sea level. When we landed in Tanzania, we were at like 5,000 feet above sea level. So some people even had symptoms right then getting off the plane. So, yeah.
that's amazing. I'm going to take a commercial break. And when we come back, I want you to take me back a year or so when you decided that you wanted to do this. Mm-hmm. And also, I want to talk about the other people that went with you. This is all Connecticut law enforcement based, this trip. So I want to hear more about that. Let's take a quick break and we'll return with more right after this.
Sweet Evelina's Stand Famous Football Special is back. Get a large cheese pizza for just $8 every Sunday when you mention football. Limit 3 per customer. Have you tried their new butternut squash pizza? It's delicious. Check out their amazing footlong hot dogs, burgers, fish and chips, scallops, whole belly clams, and more, plus wine and 25 varieties of bottled beer. Their award-winning pizza is available every Wednesday through Sunday at Sweet Evelina's Stand, Route 169 in Woodstock. Proud to sponsor Center Scoop every Tuesday morning on WINY.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mass Production!
50 years ago, a group of very talented people of all ages got together to share their love of music. Before long, Mass Production was entertaining sold-out shows in Connecticut, Massachusetts, and Rhode Island. And now, 50 years and multiple generations later, Mass Production is back with their 50th reunion concert. There are two shows only, Saturday, March 14th at 7 p.m. at Plainfield High School and Saturday, March 21st at 7 p.m. at Killingly High School. Tickets are $15 for adults, $13 for seniors, and $10 for kids 12 and under. And available now at the Quintal Agency in Central Village, the Music Lady in Moosup, New York Pizza in Danielson, and WINY Radio in Putnam.
Hi, this is Paul Smith. We hope you join us for this very special performance. Don't miss Mass Production in Concert. It's going to be spectacular.
The Center for Bone and Joint Care, the best care right here, presents Killingly Highlights every Wednesday morning at 7:25 right here on WINY. Listen each week for news and updates from Killingly High School. We'll talk about the games, the scores, the students, the athletes, and all the activities at KHS. Don't miss Killingly Highlights every Wednesday morning at 7:25 on WINY. Powered by the Center for Bone and Joint Care, 35 Kennedy Drive in Putnam, and online at bonejointcare.com. The best care right here.
Do you have a story to tell? Call the WINY Talk Show now. Our telephone lines are open. Call 928-1350.
Ricky, don't lose that number. It's the only one you own. You might use it if you feel better.
When you get.
And welcome back to the WINY Talk Show. We're joined in this hour by Detective Donna Brown of the Putnam Police Department. She's not here talking about cold cases. She's here to tell us about her trip to Mount Kilimanjaro. She just got back last week, and she's sitting down with us to tell us about this story. So I asked you what it was like. Now let's move on to why. Tell us the story. What led you to the highest point in Africa last week?
The Special Olympics. You know, I've been involved with the Law Enforcement Torch Run since 2005 when I was joined law enforcement in Virginia. And I've been doing that every year since. And I got an email from somebody I didn't even know from the Cheshire Police Department, and then also an email from Lieutenant Tim Bernier of the Guilford Police Department, asking me, they were looking to see who might be interested in doing this to raise as a fundraiser for the Special Olympics of Connecticut. So I responded, sure, I'm interested. And then it just went from there. And they had to go through all the logistics of going ahead and planning and seeing if this was actually something that was doable. And next thing we knew, we were starting the campaign and on our way to training and moving towards doing this. We kicked off, I guess, February 16th is when we got on the plane and we were on our way to Tanzania.
Wow. So there was a group of you, different members of law enforcement from different communities across Connecticut. Yeah. How big was the group?
It was a group of 12. Two of them were actually from New Jersey. There were two officers from New Jersey who joined us. We had one civilian from Guilford who is friends with an officer from Guilford. And I guess it was Wilton, Watertown, Naugatuck, PD. I would hate to leave some people out, but there was a couple other. They were mostly on the western side of the state, and then me in Putnam.
Was everybody a hiker? Was this something that this particular group said, whoa, this is something that we've always wanted to do?
Well, a lot of them were experienced hikers. Some of them had been hiking a little bit here and there and trained for it. I am not particularly a hiker. But then again, when I was 40, I did a marathon, a full marathon with no training. So it was something I said, well, I did do some training.
You're incredible.
I have a special climber thing in my basement that my husband got me that I was training on that. And I run and bike. And those are the kinds of things I did. And I did a couple of little hikes, but nothing that compares to what this was.
So it's in order to do what you did, mm-hmm. it's more about being physically fit and
yes.
and being in good health rather than just being a hiker.
Yes. They said pretty much that anybody who's in good health and good physical condition can do this. And I thought, at my age, I thought, well, this is an accomplishment for somebody my age. And then they went ahead and told me that, oh, well, this year a guy 88 did it and somebody 85 had done it. So
there's the challenge right there.
Yes.
So tell me about, over the course of the year, you were raising funds, mm-hmm. But you were also training at the same time. What was it like leading up to it? There was a lot of work that went into this.
Well, most of my focus was on the fundraising and maintaining my physical fitness and my health. The fundraising was, you had to raise a minimum of $10,000 to be able to be a part of the team.
You were the top fundraiser.
I was for a single fundraiser.
Single fundraiser.
Individual.
Yeah.
Some of the other people they were teams. So you had individual fundraising and then you had team fundraising. So I stayed pretty much in first place with that. I was very pleased with that because in the beginning I thought, am I ever going to get to $10,000? And I think I'm over 12 now. And also anybody who still wants to donate can still go to that link. They're going to keep the link open until the end of the year. So anybody
that's
else
wonderful.
Who wants
so if anybody's listening that wants to contribute to the mm-hmm. Connecticut Special Olympics on your behalf for doing what you did, I recommend that they go to the mm-hmm. Connecticut Special Olympics site to see it. Yeah. So walk me through. you're training all year long. You're getting ready. You land at the base of the mountain. What was that like?
Well, I was really struck by, the landscape and the people and the poverty. There was so much poverty, but these people were happy with what little they had, and welcome open arms for all of us. And we were all exhausted when we got there, and then there was a 2-hour van ride after we finally got out of the off the plane and out of the airport arena. And then we ended up on a dirt road for about an hour, and we were thinking, where are they taking us? And it was to this coffee farm. It's like an estate, which was the Halisi, they call it the Halisi Hotel, where they have a bunch of different buildings with rooms, and that's where we went.
Wow.
That's where it all started.
So did you start right on day one? Did you start hiking on day one? How did that work?
No, the first 2 days were to acclimatize. So we got settled in our rooms. Actually, it was like welcome to Jurassic Park because they had it was gated and a guard opened the gates, and then you go in there and it was like paradise, and they're waiting with like these rolled up warm face cloths and fresh mango juice to welcome you, and then they show you to your room, and so you stay there for you're there for 2 days, day one and day two. And day two they give you it's like a tour of the coffee farm, which is acres and acres and thousands of coffee plants and banana trees everywhere and all this wildlife. There's jackals, hyenas, bush babies. It was amazing.
So that's just a fantastic life experience.
Yes.
Just that.
Yes.
Okay, so keep going. Sorry.
And then, so day two, we had to hike to a waterfall. It was just like a practice hike to get you used to the altitude a little bit and then bring you back down. To sleep, because they say you hike high and you sleep low, so to get you used to the altitude a little bit. So, and this waterfall they said was water from Kilimanjaro, and it was absolutely beautiful, and we all went swimming in there and then hiked back. So, and then the next day three was the day that we were taken by Range Rovers to the gate, And that's where we started our climb, day three.
And how much gear were you carrying?
Oh, we had it. Well, we didn't carry the gear. We had people carrying for us, but we had to have at least a day pack with our rain gear, snacks, at least 3 to 4 liters of water, and, you know, anything else we might want to bring with us, like a camera or binoculars or things like that. And that's all we were required to carry with us. And it wasn't very heavy. So
okay. Well, and that's why you have guides.
Yes.
To were there difficult parts at the beginning that surprised you? Or was it a hike like we all know a hike to
no,
be?
No, it's, you know, because I've been to, what, Old Furnace State Park, I guess, mm-hmm. and a couple other places. And, you know, there's rocks and roots here and there. And I was, in my mind, I was thinking it's going to be like a nature trail, right? And it just goes up. There are rocks and there are drop-offs and all these routes that you have to, you know, negotiate around and climb up. So those trekking poles that they recommend that you buy, which I had never used until that day, until day three, and they were a lifesaver. So they helped you to get
you
climb
steady.
Up, get down, or whatever. It's yeah.
What sorts of conversations do you have when you're walking up Mount Kilimanjaro? Is it silent, or are people? What's the atmosphere like?
They were just talking about random stuff, and, you know, stuff from back home, stuff that we were observing there. We asked the guides and the assistant guides lots of questions about the fauna, the flora, and all kinds of other things. But they didn't recommend that you ever ask how much further to camp. You know.
So that was going to be my next question. Did anybody say, "Are we there yet"?
No. No, they didn't, because we were told right from the get-go, don't ask, because we're not going to tell you. So you're just going to keep plugging along. And any time that the guides felt like we were getting tired, they would start singing in Swahili. And it was very motivating. It was great. It was amazing.
Wow. That's a great experience. All right, let's take another break, and we've got a call for you. We'll get to the telephones. We'll be back with more right after this.
America is a great big country.
Filled with all kinds of different people.
And we all count.
That's why the 2020 Census
wants to make sure we're all counted.
Why is it so important?
Because the Census helps inform how hundreds of billions of dollars will be spent each year for things like
new roads,
health clinics,
even more school programs.
So make sure you're counted.
Because you count. Shape your future. Start here. Learn more at 2020census.gov. Paid for by U.S. Census Bureau.
See your never snooze-worthy breakfast? Wendy's is changing the breakfast game for good. Introducing what's gonna be America's favorite breakfast. They just don't know it yet.
These are a few of my favorite things.
Because holy honey butter chicken biscuit, once you get your hands on Wendy's breakfast favorites, like the breakfast baconator, oh my frosty chino goodness, you'll never want to do mornings without it. Get up and get to Wendy's and try your new favorite today. You up for this?
Favorite things, yeah.
Ever kiss any Wendy's?
Eric Quinn talks about life insurance from Girardi Insurance Services.
Life insurance is important, and it's not for the people who die. It's for the people who live. We work with individuals to help them figure out what their insurance needs are, and that can be making up for loss of income, making sure we have the correct amount of death benefit for final expenses, looking at possibly, you know, if somebody's carrying a mortgage or college needs. But I'd say the most important, and a lot of times related to couples, is the loss of income due to the death of a spouse. A general rule of thumb is that you should be carrying 8 to 10 times your earnings. We work with all the highest rated insurance companies in the country. It's close to 60 total. I'd like everyone to at least consider Girardi Insurance Services. We will add a personal touch. We'll make sure that your needs are addressed and specifically taken care of. I can assure you we will find the best rates in the marketplace.
Call Girardi Insurance Services today at 860-928-7771 and see them online at GirardiOnline.com.
Your friends at Eastern Connecticut Savings Bank present Panther Pride every Wednesday morning at 7 a.m. on WINY. Listen each week for news and updates from Plainfield High School. We'll talk about the games, the scores, and the athletes. Don't miss Panther Pride every Wednesday morning at 7 a.m. on WINY. Powered by your friends at Eastern Connecticut Savings Bank on Lathrop Road in Plainfield, or see them online at BankEasternCT.com.
Do you have a story to tell? Call the WINY Talk Show now, Our telephone lines are open. Call 928-1350.
Everybody's talking at me. I don't hear a word they're saying. Only the echoes of my mind.
And welcome back to the WINY Talk Show. We're joined by Donna Brown, Detective Donna Brown of the Putnam Police Department, who just returned from climbing Mount Kilimanjaro on behalf of the Connecticut Special Olympics. And Donna is telling us all about her trip. And I love it. We need to hear more, but we have some questions for you, Donna. So why don't we get to the telephones? You're on the air. Good morning.
Morning, Dave.
Good morning, Stan.
I'd like to say congratulations to Detective Brown and her accomplishment, and her fellow officers or patrons that did the climb. It's ironic, when you were talking with her, I said, in the past 5 years, I have met about six people that have climbed Mount Kilimanjaro. I mean, and I'm saying, I know where it was all my life, but I never, you know, a former classmate of mine a couple of years ago at my class reunion, she's a retired teacher, administrator up from New Hampshire, and when she retired, she's climbed like five different peaks, top 10 or so. And I just find it very interesting. And there's a fellow from the area, I'm sure you know him, Dave, and Donna's probably heard of him, Eric Kapituak, who climbed from the north side, I guess, which is a very the dangerous side.
That is the dangerous side.
Wow.
And back the day before, because he spoke at the coffee house one time, and he, the day before, I think they made their ascent, there were four people on the mountain, and it was mid-afternoon, and that's, you don't want to be on the side of the mountain at mid-afternoon because of the avalanche possibility. Mm-hmm. And he had a picture of them being there, and he says, ironically, moments later, they were no longer there because of an avalanche. But and if you have a problem or expire up there, that's it. You stay there. You know, that's your burial site. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I just find it very interesting, and I congratulate you on your exploit and adventure. You know, I mean, I gotta believe it was a great amount of satisfaction for you.
It was. Thank you very much.
All right. And thank you, Dave. Have a good day.
Thank you for calling, Stan. Appreciate your call. You bet. Donna, Stan brings up something interesting. The dangerous aspect of doing this. Mm-hmm. Did you give that a lot of thought before you signed up for it? And then what went through your mind when you got there?
Well, I wasn't sure what to expect. I thought, well, what if something happens to me while I'm climbing this? And it's before we started our trek on that that third day, they handed out these little business cards with a special number on it and our names, in case we needed to be airlifted off the mountain to Nairobi, Kenya, to the hospital. And if it wasn't something that was that dangerous, an event, a medical event, if they needed to get you off the mountain, I thought, well, how are they going to do that? Well, I actually witnessed when they had to take somebody down from the summit, and they bring up, there's eight people, and they run up the mountain with a metal stretcher, and they go up, and they're up there in no time. It took us 6-7 hours to get up there, and they're up there in no time. They strapped the person in and brought him down, six people carrying, two other people on the outside guiding the people down the side of the mountain with this person on a stretcher.
That wasn't any member of your team, though.
Yes, it was.
It was?
It was.
Okay. All right. Are they okay now?
Shall remain nameless?
Yes.
He was fine. He was fine. He just experienced some really severe altitude sickness symptoms, and they thought it best that they just get him down as quickly as possible.
Okay. That's a little sobering, is it not?
Yes.
Wow. All right. So on that note, when you talk about the people that are, I don't know what to call them, the folks that actually work on the mountain like that, the folks that were hosting you and taking you through, did you have to set up camp? How did all that work?
Well, we had goals every day. It was actually four days of trekking up to the summit, then 2 days, you're back at the gate in 2 days' time. So you're going very slowly up, and then they want you down as quickly as possible. So those last two treks were like 20-something miles of hiking in 2 days. But every so many miles, like the first trek from the gate to the first camp was like 4.5 miles, which took about 5 hours to get there because they make you go very slowly. And then we get to the camp, and then they assign us, you have to sign in, and then they assign you to whatever bungalow you're going to be in. And it was four to a bungalow. They were like wooden A-frames. And then, you know, and then they tell you what time dinner is going to be. And, you know, I expected dinner to be like, I don't know, box lunches or something. But they actually had it was like a long picnic table. They had it set up with a tablecloth, and they had individual placemats. Everything was all the dishes were glass, the cups, they had glasses, glass mugs, flatware, glass serving platters, and candles on the table. It was absolutely...
Wait, and where along the line was that?
Every camp we went to, all really? The way up and all the way down. Yes.
So there were folks that were shuttling past you with all that.
They were, and, you know, as we're walking slowly, you would see other members of the team... for REI, people from Tanzania, people from Zanzibar, they were all part of the team. But they'd be walking past you with like propane tanks on their heads, all kinds of gear on them, dishes, coolers, everything, all the food that they were bringing, and not to mention everybody else's gear that we didn't have to carry. There was somebody assigned to each one of us to carry our gear up to the next campsite. By the time you got to the next campsite, everything was ready to go, and all you had to do was show up and sign in and relax.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm. So let's get, we talked about it a little bit earlier. You get to the point where you're about to start the last leg. Mm-hmm. Walk us through that last leg. What was it like? You've said it several times, we were going slowly.
Yes.
How slowly did you have to go?
Well, if you're doing like a 5 mile hike or a 6 mile hike, it could take you anywhere between 5 to 7 hours to do, because they wanted you to go very slowly, because each leg had an altitude gain of anywhere from 1500 to 2500 feet. When we finally, and then we passed through all different, first we were in like the rainforest. Then we pass through what's called the moorlands and the heathers, which is the vegetation gets shorter and shorter, but it's still pretty plentiful. And then you go through what's called the alpine desert, which is completely barren and windy and dusty and cooler. And then you get to the base camp, which is 3,000 feet below the summit. And that was called Kibo Hut. And they didn't want you to stay there very long. So you get there. They feed you, they tell you to rest for 3 hours, and then they get you up in the middle of the night, and then you go again. So you do your 3,000 feet up, you're at the summit for a little while, and you come down, and then they let you rest for another hour and a half at Kibo, and then you've got another 7 mile trek back to the other hut, the mid hut.
So are you passing out? Are you just taking a good hard nap at those points, or how are you recharging your batteries?
Some people were able to sleep. I could hear them snoring.
I bet.
And I would try to put my earplugs in so I could get some sleep, but then I could just hear my heart racing, because my heart rate was like more than twice at normal rate at rest. And that gave me a little bit of anxiety, so I had a hard time getting any naps. So I actually didn't get any sleep. So that was a very long day for me, but well worth it.
And how's everybody's health being monitored? Are you all responsible to do that on your own?
No, actually they would come around, the guides would come around after dinner. They would take our pulse, our pulse ox, see what our oxygen tension in the blood was, which is supposed to be like 99 to 100%. And it's at the first camp, I noticed mine was like at 92, which mine's usually at 100. And I thought, okay, we're pretty low still, and I'm at 92. Then the next camp, it was even lower. And then at the next camp, it was even a little bit lower. And as my oxygen went down, my heart rate kept going up to compensate.
Right.
So when I was at the Kibo Hut, which is 3,000 feet right below the summit, I was thinking, what's going to happen to me when I get up there? But
yeah, were you fuzzy at all? Or
they have you take this medication called Diamox, which is supposed to help with that. But it, after a couple hours after you take it, you could get tingling in your fingers, which was very disconcerting to me, but that would go away as long as you kept drinking.
Right. Yep. So staying hydrated was
was key, and eating every bit of food that they prepared for you. You know, don't be picky. You couldn't be picky. And some people were, I don't want to eat that, and I'm not going to eat that. And I noticed some of those people had some of the problems.
Okay.
But if you ate everything they gave you, you were good to go.
So tell me about the food.
It was absolutely fantastic. All organic. Everything was organic. You started every meal, like breakfast consisted of porridge. They'd start you with a porridge, which was sweet. And they pushed a lot of sugar. They pushed salt for obvious reasons. Mm-hmm. And fresh vegetables. And then there was, sometimes we'd have pork, we'd have beef, we'd have chicken, and fish. And they would kind of rotate that around, and everything was absolutely delicious. And like I said, it was 100% organic, everything, right down to the sugar that they gave us.
And the amounts, I suppose, was everything measured?
Sent around a platter, and they told you to they tried to encourage you to take some of everything. Because there were times where I noticed that they'd have rice and they'd have pasta. And I thought, well, we're supposed to choose one or the other, but they said, take some of everything we give you.
Carb up.
So they were carb loading us. Mm. So, you know, I just ate everything.
Yep.
Everything.
Well, yeah, doing everything that they told you to do, just so that you made sure that you got up there and you got home safe.
Exactly. Because, right? You know, people who had done it before or had read about it said, you know, just do everything they tell you to do and you should be fine. And I'm a testament to that.
There you go. So now you're 3,000 feet below the summit. How does that part of the, I hate to call it a hike, we'll call it a climb. How was that part of the climb different than everything else?
I was exhausted and it was dark. So you couldn't look around and be distracted. You know, the entire hike, I was looking around at, you know, just taking it all in. But for this particular hike, it was in the middle of the night, and they told you to, with your headlamp on, look down at the trail and the feet in front of you, and that's it. So when you're tired and it's dark and you're just looking down.
Okay, so when somebody, Donna, when somebody tells me that, I'm inclined to start doing that, but then wonder what else I'm supposed to not be looking at.
I just did what I was
you
told.
You did what you were told, okay.
But out of my peripheral vision, I could see that there were many more people, support staff, along the 12 hikers. Everywhere I took, anytime I took a step, I could always see a person next to me on one side and a person next to me on the other side. So they brought everybody in to make sure we were all safe going up.
Yeah.
So, and what I didn't know is there was somebody assigned to me at that time. And he kept asking me to take my backpack, and I said, I'm good. But finally, towards the top, I said, go ahead and take my backpack, because I kept, I thought it was helping me to stay warm, but it's like, you know what, it's actually causing me to go back a little bit when I would stop. So I said, yeah, that would be good if you took my backpack. So.
Yeah, take advantage of the help.
Yes.
Absolutely. So now we get to the summit. And I know one of the goals, I read that one of the goals was to plant the Connecticut Special Olympics flag at the summit. Tell us about the significance of that and really what this climb was meant to do for Connecticut Special Olympics.
Well, it was a huge fundraiser. I think right now we're at like 159,000 plus for the...
That's amazing.
For fundraising for the team. And... And, you know, this is what everybody has been saying, and it was kind of symbolic because the Special Olympians, they climb mountains every day of their lives. So that's what the symbolism was for us. We're going to climb, you know, the highest peak in Africa. We're going to go to the roof of Africa and climb this mountain on their behalf and to do this fundraiser. So that was the symbolism behind that. So, yeah, and we planted the flag up there, and we had a, there's an American flag with the thin blue line on it that was accompanying the Special Olympics flag. So, and the Special Olympics flag had everybody's patch on it from all the police departments that were representing.
Wow, how cool is that?
Yeah.
Wow, yeah, I've seen those pictures. It's amazing. You did something else at the summit that I think is obviously something special to you and to the Putnam Police Department, but to the community. Can you share with us what you did once you got there?
Yes. Peter Chico Anderson passed away in May of 2019. And at the funeral home, they had a basket of all these little change purses with ashes from Chico. And I didn't have my glasses on. My husband went with me, and he said, do you want some of this? And I said, a change purse with the funeral home on it? No. And he said, no, these are Chico's ashes. And I was like taken aback. I said, really? And he said, I think you should. It was actually his idea. He said, why don't you take some of these, and you can take them to the mountain? And I said, that's a wonderful idea, because I know Chico loved hiking and biking and all that. And I worked with Chico when I started in 2008. I worked third shift alongside him for many years. And then I thought, what a great testimonial to take him with me and keep me safe on my trek up to the summit and release his ashes at the summit. And so that's what I did. And nobody on my team knew that I was doing that. So it became a huge surprise to them when I said, look, I have something I need to do. If somebody could grab a video of this for me, I'd appreciate it. So that's what I did. It was amazing.
Yeah, it sounds amazing.
There were people up there crying when I did it. So, I mean,
yeah,
including me.
Well, you know, everywhere you went around town, if Chico was out walking, you'd see him.
You would. And he was everywhere.
That's right. And you'd get a wave, you know, a little beep, and then he'd wave. And even if you didn't see exactly who you are, you'd get the wave. So he did that hike with you. That's amazing.
Yep. He was in my day pack all the way up.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's quite a moment. All right, so now we've been to the summit at sunrise. A sense of accomplishment, sense of relief. What were you feeling at that moment?
All of the above.
All of the above.
It was a sense of accomplishment. And then the relief of knowing that I actually did this. Because, you know, at one point, going up in the middle, and I was just so tired. And I thought, am I going to be able to keep going? And when the sun started to come up, and it got a little lighter, it's like it revitalized me. So I was wide awake then. So it was fantastic.
And you said that you could only spend a limited amount of time at the summit.
Yeah, they told us ahead of time. They said usually 15, maybe 20 minutes, because they don't want you to spend too much time up there at that altitude. But we were there, I don't know, we were there for half an hour, 45 minutes. I was really surprised we stayed up there long. But as soon as we were done with all of our photos, and they started to get us down pretty much in a hurry.
Mm.
So,
and you said that went pretty quick.
It did. Yes. Coming down, they want you to go slowly, slowly, slowly going up. But, you know, it's whatever you want on the way. If you want to go slowly back down, that's fine. But if you want to really move, they encourage that, too. If you can do it safely.
Right.
They
right.
Say,
of course.
Go ahead. So there's no danger in going down quickly.
Excellent. Let's take another quick break, and then I still have more questions for you. There's a lot more to talk about. We'll be back with more right after this.
The new best friend moment. The is it my turn to get up moment.
Thanks, Dad.
The they grow up so fast moment. You experience a lot of moments in your home. And at Kidde, we're here to remind you that installing fire safety products can protect them all. So take a moment to shop Kidde today and protect a lifetime of moments ahead. Find Kidde products at the Home Depot.
You have to be up in 5 hours, 2 hours, 6 minutes, and when you hear...
you realize that you haven't slept a wink. That's why there's ZzzQuil Pure Z's, a drug-free blend of botanicals with an optimal dose of melatonin so you can fall asleep naturally with no next-day grogginess. It's available in both liquid and gummies, tastes great, and is non-habit-forming. Pick up ZzzQuil Pure Z's from the sleep experts at Vicks ZzzQuil. ZzzQuil Pure Z's, naturally superior sleep. Available at retailers near you.
Hi, this is Sue Starkey, Director of Health for the Northeast District Department of Health, with an update on COVID-19, an evolving disease caused by a new coronavirus. Because it's new, there is no vaccine to prevent it, no medicine to cure it, and our immune systems struggle to fight it. This means it's important to stay healthy with good food choices, balanced activity and rest, and minimizing stress. We can avoid stress related to COVID-19 by being informed and sharing accurate information. Everyone, employers, educators, family members, and friends can remind people to stay home and stay away from others when sick. We all need to remember to keep surfaces and hands clean so we don't spread disease. If you aren't already in the habit, now is the time to learn to routinely wash your hands and keep them away from your face. You can learn more about how to protect yourself and others by turning to reliable sources like NDDH.org, the Connecticut Department of Public Health, and CDC.gov.
If you're looking for a great-paying part-time job with flexible hours, check out 2020 Census Jobs. You may have another job, or not. You may even be retired or looking for some extra income, but you can also help make sure that everyone gets counted. So apply today at 2020census.gov/jobs to help strengthen your community.
Do you need money for college? Are you interested in a career in broadcasting? If you're a Connecticut resident studying journalism, communications, sales, marketing, production, or broadcast engineering, you're eligible for a scholarship from the Connecticut Broadcasters Association. The deadline is March 15th. Go to ctba.org to download the application form and apply now.
Be part of the solution, not part of the problem. Call the WINY Talk Show now and offer your opinion and ideas at 928-1350. Call now and be heard.
Operator, or could you help me place this call?
Welcome back to the WINY Talk Show. We're joined this morning by Detective Donna Brown of the Putnam Police Department, who has just returned from climbing Mount Kilimanjaro for Connecticut Special Olympics, and we've been talking about the trip. Donna, was there anything that was unexpected? I suppose the whole trip, since you've never done anything like that before, was unexpected, but anything that happened along the way that surprised you?
Oh, the people.
Yeah, the people.
The people were absolutely amazing. They were such a happy, happy people. And we live in a society of excess here. They have basically nothing, and they're happy, and they respect all the plant life. They respect all the animal life. I mean, down to like bugs and slugs and things like that. They'll stand, if there was a slug at the camp, not the campsite, but at the hotel, and there were people standing around saying, "Look out! Don't step on this or don't hurt this." They don't use everything is organic. They don't use any insecticides there because their ecosystem is perfectly balanced. All the fauna, all the plants, you know, the coffee plants, everything that you saw, nothing was eaten up by bugs or anything. Everything looked perfect, and it's because their ecosystem is completely balanced with like the bugs and the birds and the bats, and everything takes care. They take care of each other.
Wow, were there things that they told you couldn't bring along, or that you should bring along? Were there some specific items that they told you to pack or not pack?
Well, I don't remember them telling we couldn't take something. They just told us not to take things that weren't necessary. I guess they kind of know that we're used to excess, and we basically would probably take things we didn't really need. So they would tell us, you know, you always bring your rain gear, always bring your water, always bring your snacks, and you know, if you have a camera or binoculars or something and you need to bring that, go ahead. But they wanted us to pack light, and a lot of times, especially the smaller statured people, which I am one of them, they would come and pick up my backpack before we would go to see, and they'd tell me, this is too heavy, this is too heavy. Is there something you can take out of it? I said, not unless you take the water out, because basically that's what most of this is. Yes. So, and they would take one of my water bottles out, or two of my water bottles out, and they would carry them for me so that my backpack could be a little lighter.
Mm-hmm. Well, I suppose if they do it, I don't want to say they, do they do it every day? Do these guides do this every day? Are they...
No, I think some of them have their own private contract. They do their own private, I guess they guide some hikers, but a lot of them work for REI. So they get a salary, or they get paid by REI, and then they depend on our tipping them to beef up their salary. But. Sure. So I think some of them are like private contractors too, that they can work outside of REI and they do their own private tours or whatever.
Okay.
So, but they, you know, here we are humping along, trying to breathe and taking slow steps, and they're singing and just kind of walking up, running back, doing what, and doesn't affect them at all. So it's, they are definitely acclimated and used to doing this all the time.
That's amazing. Do you think you'll do this again?
I don't, you know, now that I know what to expect, I wouldn't mind doing it again, but I think it's kind of a one and done thing for me. We're trying to find out what the next best thing to do would be, but it seems like we've really outdone ourselves, because
I think
what else can you do?
I think you have, for sure. So at the end, you come down to base camp. Do you celebrate?
Yes, we celebrate. Actually, we had a crew or a staff, I guess, of 46. We had six guides with us at all times, and then all the rest were support staff. You know, the people carrying equipment, people, you know, we had our own chef. We had a waiter. We had other ancillary staff that were helping move the camp. And when we got down there, we had a little celebration, and they sang it was a very lengthy, like, song and dance that they did, all 46 of them, to welcome us to the bottom. Because it was, before it was welcome to the climb, and then it's welcome to being back down, and congratulations. And, there was a celebration. And then when we went back to the hotel, there was another ceremony where they presented us with a certificate for climbing and a little patch, a Kilimanjaro patch that they gave all of us. And it was a pretty emotional time. And we had a wonderful dinner together there as well.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Tell me what, you told me this during the break, what one of the guides called you.
Actually, when he found out my age, he started calling me Mama. And Madame, and they said that's out of respect. When I was hiking along, I had a couple of the guides come up behind me and say something in Swahili, and at the end of it, it said Simba, and I said, well, what does that mean? And if I could look on my phone, yeah, I could remember what the actual Swahili words were. But I said, well, what did that mean? And they said, you're strong like a lion, strong like a lion. So they would incorporate that into some of their songs that they were singing, their inspirational, motivational songs to keep us going. And they made it a point to use all our names in their prayers, because they would pray singing as we were walking when times would get hard or whatever, especially, you know, towards the top. And they would sing and motivationally, and then they would pray for us to get to the top. And it was... I can't even think of the right superlatives to use, but it was absolutely amazing, and it was a fantastic experience.
Strong like a lion.
Strong like a lion.
Oh, that's going to stick, you know. I think that's going to stick. What a great accomplishment and a great thing to take home.
Yeah.
Have to remind everybody about that.
Yes.
So people can still donate to this effort. How can they do that? How can they learn more on how to contribute to what you did?
Oh, the Cops Conquering Kilimanjaro site on Facebook, there's a link that they can that they can go to, or the Special Olympics. I think it's Special Olympics Conquering Kili 2020. If you Google that, it'll take you right to the link where you can donate to the team. You can also choose an individual to donate to. They can do it that way. I can give that link to you if you want to put it up
absolutely.
On your website.
Absolutely, yeah, we'd be happy to do that. And you made some new friends.
Yes.
Probably some pretty interesting friendships derive yes. from an accomplishment like this.
Well, I'll...
And you learn a lot about somebody else, don't you?
Yes. And what's interesting to me is actually the team, we were like around a... at the hotel, we were around a fire pit, and we were all talking about the experience. And some people said, I don't know how you did this. And I said, what do you mean? They said, you didn't know any of us. They all knew each other. I mean, a lot of the team already knew each other. And I didn't know anybody until the day I got there, and I met people. And then, well, I saw some on some media spots. I met a few people for a couple minutes here and there, but that was it. And I said, well, you know, I was in the military, in the police academy, and where you don't know anybody, and then people who have a common goal, and they have the same hardships.
And you all did for yep. Connecticut Special Olympics.
And we all had the same hardships. We had to work, pull together, and friendships form immediately. So it was really nice. And then the friendships and the camaraderie between us and the guides and the support staff was amazing.
What an amazing accomplishment. And I thank you for sharing this with us this morning. And I encourage our listeners, if you were impressed by this story, which you should be, and we're all proud of you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
We have been following this since you started fundraising. We were all interested. But then once you got there and we saw the map and where you were on the mountain, we were glued to it. There were a lot of people that were pulling for you and wondering how it was going. So, and I know that a lot of our listeners said, boy, we'd love to take a break from politics and hear from Donna. And so we've been working on that, and we're glad that you're here, and thank you for sharing the story with us.
Oh, my pleasure.
And we hope that folks will continue to support Connecticut Special Olympics and the torch run coming up in a few months. Will you be
June.
Participating in that?
Yes, it'll be June.
Excellent.
I don't know, it's like the first Wednesday
sure.
in June, something
yep.
like that. Mm-hmm.
Good stuff. Thank you for coming in.
Okay, thank you for having me.
We're going to let you get back to work now, I guess.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. We're going to take a break now for our national and international news, and then local news with Cherie.